This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and thanks for joining us on our radio Main Street all across the state of North Dakota this time of day. Today, our show is going to focus a bit on arts, summer arts, if you will. We're going to talk about things that are going on across the state and maybe that might have attracted your attention in years past and may in years in the future as well. We're going to start with the Artist in Residency Program. It's a partnership between the North Dakota Parks and Recreation Department and the North Dakota Council on the Arts. Three artists are chosen to spend a week in a North Dakota state park. The goal is to support North Dakota artists while providing opportunities for visitors of all ages to witness the artistic process. Ashley Thornburg recently visited with Amy Schimmitz, an Outdoor Learning Center interpreter with the State Parks and Rec Department, and Kim Conoco, Executive Director of the North Dakota Council on the Arts.
Amy, thank you for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here.
Kim, thank you for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here, too.
Kim, I'll start with you. How do these residencies work?
Well, we start partnering with Amy in the parks very early on, and we put together a letter of agreement. Amy does a lot of the legwork in making sure that the word gets out, and we then share that PR, and we want to make sure that artists all over the state are receiving the information. And then we go through a panel process with the three directors from the state parks so that they have a sense of who these artists are. And we work against a criteria. It's important for us that there is strong artistry, very strong community outreach, impact, kind of an arm to it. And then we just look at also the ways that each of the person has described their residency, and all of the applications are scored, and then a selection is made.
Well, we will get more into that in a little bit, but Amy, you are on the parks side of this. Why do you want artists at the parks?
You know, the artists provide such a neat aspect and a different outlook in all of our state parks. All of our state parks are very unique and they're very different. Personally, my favorite part of this residency program is, you know, I've been working in the parks for over a decade, and for me to have the opportunity to see these parks and how these artists are inspired by and how they see the parks is really unique to me, and I find that really interesting.
They say when you go to another country, it takes a foreigner to see your own country. And even though you've been in these parks working as an interpreter for a long time, I bet there are things to see that look a little different when you're right alongside an artist.
Yeah, it's really unique. We've had everything from performing artists to literary artists to visual artists. It's been pretty amazing. Another aspect is, you know, part of the agreement when these artists participate in this program is the fact that they donate back to the park that hosted them a piece of their artwork that represents their residency, their week during that park.
And does that go into the interpretive center then?
Yeah, it goes somewhere in the park.
I mean, nice.
I mean, all of our parks are different, so sometimes it goes into, you know, the main office or the visitor center or another facility within that park, but it's on public display.
And is the artwork supposed to be very obviously inspired by the park? Or, you know, if someone just works in collage, they just work in collage, they just happen to be doing it at the park?
The only criteria we ask is that their artwork is a representation of their residency at the park.
You know, one of the artists that we had last year was a yoga instructor. So we were all very curious to see how she would interpret that and how she would do her community activities. Did you see some of her work?
I was not there. However, I followed up with how it went, and they did, you know, yoga poses that were related to nature and things that the artist found and was inspired by.
Oh, deer pose is such a lovely restorative pose.
Exactly.
I could just hang out in that all day. Yeah, reverse swan diving.
Or even tree.
Yeah. Oh, tree. Yes, tree. Good one. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, see, and that was the first one that came to my mind. That was the only one I really knew.
Well, mine goes to animals, you know, cat, cow, etc. Kim, you've been doing this program more than a decade. I know you haven't been with the Council on the Arts for more than a decade, but the council has been involved for more than a decade, minus a year for some other reasons that didn't quite work out to have it. What kind of changes have you seen with the artists from year to year?
I would say the changes are really in the fact that of late, I think environment and nature have become more of a theme in terms of how they relate to the arts and how intertwined they can be. So I think we've seen probably earlier on more traditional work, whether, again, it's painting or ceramics or any other art form. And I think that now as people are talking about how important the arts are in those other areas, you're seeing people just try more and different things. And I don't know that it comes out so much in the artwork as it does more in the community activities.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've seen programs across the state. I know I did an interview late last year where there was an artist in residency at a mall. And the thought process there was, you don't have to always go to a museum. And there is sort of this encounters with unexpected art aspect here.
And I would say that for a lot of people in North Dakota, that when they go to the park, they're probably not expecting to see an artist or right. interact with one.
Well, mm-hmm. there's so many ways that people can connect with the outdoors and connect with our parks. You know, most people, immediately, of course, their mind's going to go to recreation. It's going to go to hiking and backpacking, those types of things. But connect this art being inspired by our parks and inspired by our natural resources is just another thing that our state parks can provide.
Well, give us a rundown of who are the artists for this year.
We have three different parks that are hosting this year. The first one is Lake Metegoshi State Park, and that will be Jennifer Matthews. She's a Bismarck artist, so she's going to be at Lake Metegoshi State Park July 14th through the 21st. And then towards the end of her residency, on the 19th and 20th, she's going to be providing some opportunities for our park visitors to you know, see her in action and understand a little bit about how she got into doing what she does. So she'll be displaying some of her artwork. And then on the 20th, she's going to be actually set up where people can view her in action, so to speak, as she paints. And then later that evening on the 20th, they're going to be highlighting an endangered species, where she's going to be giving people little pieces that are going to eventually be given to the participants to create and color and work on and paint. And then towards the end, they're going to put all those pieces together like a puzzle and have a finished masterpiece. Fort Ransom State Park is also hosting. They are hosting Linda Roche, and they're hosting her August 4th through the 11th. And our third location, which is Fort Stevenson State Park, Karen Bakke will be doing the residency there from August 11th through the 18th. The events for Fort Ransom and Fort Stevenson haven't all been worked out, but as details unfold and as those details are available, people can go to their Facebook pages and they have event listings on there to where they can get those details.
Well, between hearing about the yoga artist of a year past and then this interaction that Jennifer is going to be doing with helping people create artworks together, is that a key component of who gets picked, that there is some hands-on interacting here?
You know, I think, again, when we use the criteria that we're looking at and really first starting with the artistry and then really looking at how they describe what they're going to do, it's interesting how each artist approaches it very differently, and they're very individual. But I think that as we just score everything and really add up the point system, the top proposals that shine are the ones that both have the high level of artistry and have mm-hmm. a really good interactive component laid out to work with the public.
So how does that point system work? What are the top 5 or 10 things that you're looking for? I mean, I know you've mentioned artistry and some hands-on capabilities.
The artistry, the interaction with the public, how did they do on their application, just in terms of presenting themselves? We did ask them for an artist statement this year, which okay. I think in the past we hadn't done that. But it's very interesting to hear about how an artist describes themselves, what influences them as they make their work. And that was always key just in terms of how we looked at everybody's proposal.
It's yeah, because this can be so difficult. I mean, judging, and I'm using air quotes there, art, it's such a subjective thing.
It is a subjective thing, but that's also why you have to have criteria,
right,
and a set number of points to kind of guide you. And at first, two of the directors were a little taken aback when I brought that up, and I said, "But you will see, it will work out in the long run. It has an evening effect, so it really lets everybody be looked at first at one level, and then you see what rises and lowers."
Okay, is it only open to North Dakota artists?
Yes, it's only open to North Dakota artists.
Are there plans for expansion? There are more than three state parks in the state.
We're both looking at each other, and you know, if money were not an object, we would probably expand maybe one or two. But I think given the short time frame that the parks are open, we want to make sure that the parks and the directors are not overwhelmed by having to do activities, and this is something they want to do. So I think we will talk about expansion.
And it's worked really well. We have 11 North Dakota state parks that are open year-round and that are staffed. And over the years through this collaboration, all of those 11 state parks have been able to host an artist at least once.
Nice.
Most of them have hosted two, three, and a couple of them now are approaching their fourth time hosting over these years.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And it's kind of nice to move around. And, you know, something else to be said, too, is, you know, all of our state parks are different. And some of the parks, something like this works out facility-wise better and logistically in some more than others. So that
I would love to see a residency in the winter. That would be wonderful.
We can make that happen.
We can make that happen.
Well, Kim, we made it 11 minutes into the conversation before the word money entered.
Pretty good.
But we do have to talk about that because funding is a critical piece of this. Where does the money for the Artist in Residency program come from?
Basically, we get half of our funds from the state legislature and, again, half from the National Endowment for the Arts. And in our program line, we have an allocation that is called letters of agreement. And those are usually not a straight-on application, but it's a partnership agreement that we make with other agencies and organizations such as Prairie Public, such as Humanities North Dakota, United Tribes, the parks. And so those are ones that we can design a little bit so that the partnership is what its strength is, and we're using both sides of the equation.
Amy, what are some other reasons people should go visit the parks this summer?
Oh, we have, you know, all of our parks are so very different and they're so very unique, and we offer just a wide variety of, you know, activities. I mean, we have horse parks, we have historical parks, we have parks that are, you know, heavy in recreation, and parks that are heavily nature-based, and so we have something for everybody. You know, it doesn't matter where you go. I think a person needs to figure out what they want to do and go from there. We have something that we're able to offer all types of enthusiasts, both, you know, whether you're 8 or 80, you can find something to do in our North Dakota state parks.
Kim, can an artist get a residency more than 1 year?
Yes, you can. But one of the things that we really stated this year was is that our first priority would be to new artists. And we would just see how, when we did the panel, all of the scoring came out. And in fact, we had a return artist who really scored very high. So she is coming back. But
sure,
we've got two new artists.
She knows the system.
Yeah. Well, she did a good job on her application.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Kim, I asked Amy what she's excited about the parks for the rest of the summer. What are you excited about in the arts world for the summer?
Peak and Art Show, which I've never been to, and I'm very excited to do that. Close at home, I have to go to Sleepy Hollow. And then I'm going to actually try to get over to Trollwood this summer and see their musical. But I think for me, I'm going to do a little bit of a trip to the northeast corner of the state, and then I'm going to do a trip to the southwest corner and visit all of our arts organizations and agencies, and somewhere in there stop in New Rockford as well.
Oh, you are going to have some lovely North Dakota scenery time.
And I've never been to Medora, and I think I must go.
Yes.
Well, how long have you been here now?
A year and a half.
Oh, it's time.
It's time.
It's time. All right. Well, Kim and Amy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
For having us.
That was Main Street's Ashley Thornburg in a conversation with Amy Schimmitz, who works for the state's Parks and Recreation Department, and Kim Conoco, Executive Director of the State Council on the Arts. Later this month, Prairie Public's television service will travel to Lake Metegoshi State Park to feature the residency of artist Jennifer Matthews for a future program. Next on Main Street, we'll visit Pekin, North Dakota, site of last weekend's Pekin Days Art Show, a popular Nelson County attraction.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Last weekend, I took in the Pekin Days Art Show. Pekin has been putting on the show for many years, and it has grown to attract artists and art appreciators from a wide area. Nelson County Arts Council Executive Director Sarah Heitkamp and I sat by the busy front door to talk about a very small town that puts on a big event.
This is our 26th annual Pekin Days Art Show, and we've got a big art show happening, 291 submissions this year, as well as a little shop where artists contribute some works as well. There are vendors over in the park selling some work and different activities set up. This rain is kind of, you know, dampening our activities a little bit, but we're hanging in there and having fun.
Well, I should mention we're sitting right by the front door, so of course there's a little activity, people coming in and out. Well, you mentioned how many years this has been going on. Do you know how it started?
Okay, 26 years ago, a group of folks started it, and I believe that the first show that was shown here had just all sorts of artwork, and the joke is, but it's not really a joke because it's true, that five of the artists were living and the other 17 were dead. So people were cleaning out, you know, their garages and attics and finding artwork, showing that and selling that, and it just became this event annually where people would bring in their artwork to sell. Eventually, you know, it evolves in the 90s into an entire nonprofit organization really focused on art and artists, and we have events all throughout the year, and we're funded, you know, with a grant from the North Dakota Council on the Arts and then private donors as well.
Well, tell us a bit about your background. How did you get into the job of executive director?
So I've lived in Nelson County for 15 years. I have a family here. And in the meantime, I got my master's degree in fine art. So I do have a background in art. I am also the manager and curator for the University of North Dakota's art collections. And so when they needed a new director, I kind of thought maybe it was my time to just step up and help out.
And couldn't help but notice you have a famous last name.
I do. You know, it's hard to go anywhere in North Dakota and not have someone ask about that Heitkamp name. The Heidi Heitkamp, you know, folks, those are my husband's cousins. But, you know, I proudly own the whole family.
We Googled Pekin as we were driving in and discovered that in the 2010 census, there were 70 people counted in Pekin. So this is a significant boost to the population.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say we probably see, you know, anywhere from a 500 to 1,000% increase, you know, over the weekend. You know, we'll have hundreds of folks come through. Some years there's been thousands. It kind of just depends on what's going on. Our art sale is incredibly successful. You know, over a weekend we'll probably sell $25,000 to $30,000 worth of artwork. We might exceed that this year. That's a lot of art here in Pekin.
And it sustains the
Art Council, I assume?
Absolutely. Well, you know, the artists do get the majority of those, but we do, yes, absolutely, have a commission that comes back to the council. Yeah, it keeps us going year to year, and it's good to support all these, like, incredible artists from the region.
Well, we strolled around, looked at the art, and there were some very familiar names there, and of course the state is represented very well.
It is. The state's represented incredibly well. We have art from all corners of the state. We also have art from out of state, several pieces from Minnesota. The farthest piece of artwork came from Ohio. So people do ship us their artwork just for this show.
How does the word get out? Is it word of mouth about Pekin now? Or how do you get artists to submit?
Well, we put those call for artists out through the arts organizations and online, and we send to previously participating artists. We'll send them an entry, and then also word of mouth. You know, someone will say to their friend, or I said to a couple friends this year, are you going to send me some art to Pekin or what? And they did, you know, and their art sold, so they're going to be thrilled, and they'll thank me, I'm sure. Yeah, we have a good time with it.
When you talk about art in North Dakota, Pekin actually does show up. This show has been going on for a long time. I've known friends of mine who've talked about the Pekin Days art show. Do people in Nelson County have an appreciation for the fine arts that we don't perhaps appreciate?
Okay, I'm so glad you mentioned that. Nelson County is really special. A lot of people don't realize that there's an incredible, like, creative force that around here. It is everyone from full-time working artists to farmers who just, you know, paint and sculpt when they want to CNAs and teachers. So many people taking part in that creative process. And then that manifests into events like this. But also, you know, participation in the Art for Life program, where artists are going into our elder care facilities and spending time with them and going into schools and working with those kids, bringing the kids and elders together. We have, you know, so many different things going on. And I think if anyone had any amount of time to spend here, they'd start to realize you can probably encounter sculpture gardens around Nelson County. There's the giant barn quilt trail gets a lot of publicity around here. Buses come in to see that. This giant, you know, art show that we have. I mean, there's a lot going on here in Nelson County.
Well, it's a very interesting idea to come to a town that is as small as this and to have this much artistic interest and activity going on. What else does the Arts Council do in terms of its schedule during the year?
Yeah, well, the next big thing for us will be the Stump Lake Fine Arts Youth Camp. So there we're taking kids from third grade all the way through high school and having regional artists come in and teach them for a week out at a camp out on Stump Lake. And it's great. And every year it grows bigger and bigger. Last year we had 106 kids, and we bus them from these little towns into the camp. And, you know, they get to choose three different workshops, three different artists to work with. And they learn these new skills. And it might be beading or sculpting or painting. There's performing arts going on at the same time, too. We also do a really big high school art show for the region. We have community theater. We do just so many different, there's always something going on here.
We hear a lot about STEM these days, science, technology, yeah, engineering, and mathematics. Talk about the STEAM element, the arts, the importance of that in curriculum.
Yeah, well, you know, we know that adding those, you know, people call them soft skills, but, you know, I might argue a little bit that they're not soft skills. But we know that the skills that are developed when you are practicing creative processes, whether it's, you know, a fine art, or it might be the framing process or the writing about your artwork, like, all of that is so important to everything else you're doing, and you're building skills that you're going to use the rest of your life. And it really, we really got to get to where we're focusing on STEAM instead of STEM. I can't say that enough. Yeah.
This is a largely volunteer operation here to make this work. Tell us a bit about that.
So we have a volunteer board of directors, and there's nine of them. And then I'm the executive director, and I'm just part-time, you know, helping as well. So, and then we have a pretty great force of volunteers that come in for events like this to really, you know, help make it happen.
What about the people of Pekin?
The people of Pekin, they would be considered maybe full-time volunteers because someone's always, you know, keeping an eye on the building, or, you know, it was a rough winter, so someone might be running over to make sure the pipes aren't frozen and, you know, making sure that everything's operating, or running over a pan of bars during, you know, an event or an artist lecture or something like that. So, yeah, we're pretty lucky to be in this community.
That was Nelson County Arts Council Executive Director Sarah Heitkamp. We'll continue our conversation about her organization after the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. More severe weather could be headed our way later today. Bismarck National Weather Service meteorologist Ken Samosko says a cold front coming in from the northwest could trigger those thunderstorms. That front should be along the North Dakota-South Dakota border by this evening.
And as it's heading south and doing that, and we warm into the 80s today, we're going to see some isolated scattered showers and thunderstorms develop. The likely time for that would be between about 3 p.m. to about 6 p.m., and they should rapidly increase in coverage and intensity this evening in through tonight. So the hazards we're looking at with this particular potential severe weather event would be hail to the size of 1 3/4 inch diameter hail. Well, that's golf ball size. Also, damaging winds of 60 miles per hour and heavy rainfall as well.
Samosko says we could see showers and thunderstorms over the next several days. Fargo City Commissioner Tony Gehrig will bring a proposal to the Liquor Control Board to consider a change in mandatory server training. His plan was discussed at last night's City Commission meeting. It would allow each bar owner to train their employees that police would oversee. That training is now conducted by police 4 times a month. Gehrig told city commissioners server training is falling short, and he says the change would free up police resources.
Maybe we shouldn't be doing that, because it doesn't say that we have to have our people doing it. It takes our man hours to do it. We have to try to get the people in the classes. We're taking all that extra time and effort to set up these classes and then actually conduct the classes. If we look at the ordinance and how it's written, each establishment can have their own training. It just has to be approved by us.
Police Chief Dave Todd is skeptical of the plan.
I think we can meet demand. I don't think that's the issue. I know Commissioner Gehrig is more concerned about the time involved for officers and whether that should used somewhere else. This ordinance is really about oversight. And if you're asking liquor license holders to provide their own oversight, maybe that would be a conflict of interest there.
According to the Liquor Control Board, as of January, only 50% of bars met their server training requirement. After a city notification, that number has risen to around 80%. If the Liquor Control Board approves, Gehrig's proposal would go to the City Commission, which would have the final say. And the University of North Dakota has been awarded a $1 million contract to conduct research on behalf of the Naval Service Surface Warfare Center in an effort to improve the understanding of thunderstorms. David Deline is an associate research professor of atmospheric sciences at UND. He says the CAPE Experiment 2019 is a partnership between UND, the U.S. Navy, and Weather Modification International in Fargo. It will combine aircraft measurements and observations with the Navy's Mid-Course Doppler Radar, or MCR, to develop better cloud models.
So one of the important things about this research is to understand cirrus clouds. So these are the high clouds that get generated by thunderstorms. And computer models, weather models right now have a hard time predicting the amount and occurrence of these high thunderstorm-generated clouds. And so our measurements will help understand the processes that result in the formation of these particles. And if we better understand the processes, that will improve the weather models.
The project will expand the work of previous UND, WMI, and Navy research projects from 2010 and 2015. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Pekin, North Dakota may have fewer than 100 residents, but its annual summer arts show has made it a well-known summer destination. Nelson County Arts Council Executive Director Sarah Heitkamp says rural doesn't mean out of touch.
You know, I always hesitate to put people in rural areas, you know, especially rural areas I know about, which is North Dakota, into a box, because it's just so diverse and there's so many different perspectives and creative people and ideas and thoughts, and it's really cool. It's a great place to be.
Now, the art that's here is priced anywhere from $25 and under. Mm-hmm. There's a special area in the display floor for that, up to a few thousand, actually. Yes. So do you have any sense of the biggest piece that's ever been sold here by any chance?
You know, I'm not positive what the biggest piece is, but I know that there is a painter, the name is slipping my mind, whose works are, you know, typically in the $4,000 to $5,000 range, and it's pretty common for her work to sell. So, and I know there is a piece in this show for $25,000, but I think he just puts so much work into it. It's like 500 layers of steel to make this, like, special knife, and he just put so much into it he didn't want to sell it. But if someone has $25,000, they're willing to dish out, I guess they can have it.
So when do you start planning this show for the next year?
Right away. It kind of is always going on. We always have to be talking about what worked this year and what we want to do different next year. And then by the time spring hits of next year, we'll be full force with organizing the artists' work and the vendors in the park and all of that.
The artists bring the work or they mail it to you?
Both. Yep, we take it both ways. So this year we had a weekend where they brought in work. We had a couple special days for big deliveries, like a delivery from Fargo. And then we received several packages in the mail as well.
The art, of course, requires special handling sometimes. Yes. Or generally, art does require special handling.
It does, yeah. And, you know, I have a background in art, so I'm a good person to be unpacking and taking care of that art. But our entire board and volunteers, they're all very skilled. This isn't their first time handling any of it. So,
is there anything else about Nelson County Arts Council or the Pekin Days art show that we should talk about?
I will say that it's a really great event. We always need, you know, more volunteers, and we're excited when new artists join us. So if anyone ever wants to reach out and ask more questions, we are, you know, always available for that.
And if somebody asks you whether or not the state or somebody, you know, should support efforts like this, what is your answer as the executive director?
You know, keeping arts programs vibrant in rural areas is so important. And so they should know that every dollar that they're contributing to an organization like ours is getting used and put back into the community and back into artists and back into our kids and back into a programming 100% plus some. I mean, it just really is a great investment in our communities when you support us in that way.
That was Sarah Heitkamp, Executive Director of the Nelson County Arts Council. The Stump Lake Fine Arts Youth Camp she referred to will take place August 4th through the 9th. Coming up on Main Street, we'll learn about this summer's Ignite Learning Summit from Darcy Backegaard of Prairie Public's Education Division.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by AARP North Dakota, providing caregiving resources, healthy living information, tips for families to avoid scams, and connecting with communities at fun events. They're creating real possibilities here in North Dakota. AARP.org/ND.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton in studio with Ashley Thornburg and Darcy Backegaard, the teacher ambassador and professional development coach with Prairie Public's Education Division. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me back.
We have you in periodically to talk about fun ways to keep parents, kids, teachers inspired to keep learning, especially throughout these summer months when it can get a little bit difficult.
Exactly.
And so this one focuses around the Ignite Learning Summit. What is this?
Well, I will preface this by saying I have a general standing rule not to talk about back to school till after the 4th of July.
Thank you.
So we're a little early. So for all of you teachers out there, apologies. I'm not trying to cause any panic attacks.
Right.
But
there's some nervous ticks going on.
There's some nervous ticks hearing because I'm about to say we have this great back to school Ignite Learning Summit coming up in August, the 13th and 14th. It's in Fergus Falls, Minnesota, but all area teachers are welcome to attend. And it's going to be a great day to do exactly what you just said, Ashley, to really reignite and re-energize to get ready for a new school year.
Yeah.
So properly placed in that August 13th, 14th, hopefully just before you're going back to school. And after we talk about it right now, you don't need to think about it. You can wait for a few more weeks. I was at a store the other day, and there's some back-to-school displays already out, and it just
breaks.
It hurts.
Yeah.
It really hurts.
Especially the kids.
Right. Yeah. Like, let them enjoy at least through the 4th of July.
Right,
like,
yeah.
There should be enough fireworks for that. But this is a great way to just ignite that spark and rekindle that passion for getting back to the classroom.
So what happens at an Ignite Learning Summit?
Well, at this Ignite Learning Summit, this is a brand new summit that we have started, Prairie Public, along with the Lakes County Service Cooperative, and it's being hosted by Fergus Falls Public Schools, Kennedy Secondary School. So this is the first annual, and our goal was really to, like I said, spark educators to launch them back to the classroom. So we've got the North Dakota Teacher of the Year, Kayla Delzer-Dornfeld, is going
She's wonderful.
She is a spark in and of herself. So just to come and get to hear her keynote and get inspired by how she connects with students in her classroom, that's going to be fantastic.
She's presented at TEDx Fargo.
She's presented all over.
At Twitter headquarters.
Yes. And I mean, she presented in Amsterdam. She's presenting for schools and districts all over the world right now. So it's really great that we got on her schedule and we snagged her to be part of this local day of learning. And then the rest of the day is featuring breakout sessions of area teachers sharing their expertise so that we can learn with and from each other. And we have a wide variety of topics to help ignite you back into the classroom. And these area teachers are going to share their expertise and give you some ideas to go back into the 2019, and I can't believe I'm saying it, 2020 school year.
So how do these teachers get involved with the summit? What do they need to do?
You can go to ignitelearningsummit.com. If you type that in, you can get registered. There is a fee to attend, but it's a great day of learning. Your meals are included. That includes the keynote, a few fun swag gifts, and you can get involved by attending. We've closed the call for presenters, so we've just confirmed with presenters today, actually, for all of those breakout sessions. So we're building a really fun, exciting schedule for those teachers to get ready for back to school.
Well, some of these breakout sessions, I love just the sounds of this one right away, the compass to nature, because people have started throwing around this term nature deficit disorder, that kids in particular are spending too much time indoors and not connecting with nature. What is the compass to nature?
This is a breakout session that's was proposed by the Fergus Falls Wetland Management District in Minnesota. So I don't know everything about this session, but they're going to talk about how to use natural compasses and how to connect, to do a lot of the things you're saying, to really take your classroom outside and to connect in that way, and how to orient yourself in nature, how to use that, and then building that into your regular science or geology curriculum.
Do attendees get education credits for this?
Yes, they can get seat hours. So most Minnesota teachers will have seat hour requirements. You can also attend a second day optional extension, the Educator Innovation Lab, and that two-day combo pack is available for continuing education for one master's credit.
How do you decide the flow of the breakout sessions?
We try to just balance for the variety and interest. So maybe some tech topics at the same time as some non-tech topics. So depending on what you're interested in, we have a great proposal that I'm very excited for because I would like to learn about this, about getting chosen, maximizing funding opportunities. A great teacher from down in the Wahpeton area is going to share about her success getting GoFundMe projects sponsored for her classroom as a way for her to get more technology or different
different things in her classrooms. And while that's an extra burden for some educators, it also is a great opportunity to expand your classroom in a way that you maybe can't with the regular school budgets. So we'll have a variety of things that kind of balance. So a little bit of nature and then a little bit of tech. So we've got some Google breakout sessions. I'll do some sessions on gratitude and some interactive theater experiences that you can use in the general classroom. So we'll have a wide variety of topics.
Let's explore that gratitude piece a bit.
Yeah. What are you doing with gratitude and why?
As a high school teacher, I just saw a lot of and heard a lot of negativity from teenagers. It's a really overwhelming time for a lot of young people. In addition to everything that's happening in their bodies and their brains, with the advent of social media, it can be a very stressful time. And then you add in applying for college and testing and all of these other things, and it can be a lot for kids. So I found that if I modeled gratitude in the classroom, that really went a long way in A, just building a positive dynamic in the classroom, but it was really helping build up their brains and their own resilience. So we would focus on doing small acts of gratitude, whether it was little things like literally writing thank you notes when we would have guests come to our classrooms. My seniors had to interview a professional in a career area that was of interest to them, and then they had to write handwritten thank you notes, and we practiced where to put a stamp on an envelope because it's a lost art. Students didn't know like where they put their address, and that sounds weird thinking about 18-year-olds not knowing something so basic, but they had never had to do it. They don't write that many letters anymore. So we practice gratitude, and a colleague and I have developed a few different just fun, interactive activities to build some gratitude into any classroom.
Well, seeing how crass a lot of the social messaging is these days, some civility education is probably useful.
Very useful. And it's also just that reframing your mind. So if something unexpected or negative happened in the classroom, so something didn't work the way I had wanted it to work, which happens, right? Murphy's Law in life, also in the classroom. I would talk about that with the students of just briefly and then choose to focus on why this is a good thing. So we couldn't do what I spent hours planning last night that we were going to do today. But instead, that means we get to think creatively, we get to think on our feet, and now you get to tell me what you want to do with this time.
Almost like you're teaching life skills.
Very much.
Well, there's a lot of fascinating information out on the internet of what actually happens in your brain and in your body when you do start practicing gratitude.
Yes.
And I would think as an educator that it gives you a little bit of insight into the private lives of students. If one student is grateful about an upcoming trip to Hawaii while another student is grateful to get to see dad
for the first time in months.
Yeah.
Right. It is an amazing way to just get a sneak, a very safe way because students are sharing what is comfortable for them. So I did something in my classroom, even with my juniors and seniors, just in my English classroom, we would start Fridays with moments of joy. And I would just ask people to share a moment of joy from this week. So something positive that happened, something you were proud of, something that you witnessed in a classmate and that you just want to acknowledge in someone else, or something you were looking forward to. And you're exactly right. If a student tells me, oh, yeah, I'm really looking forward to hunting this weekend, that's very different than a student who's like, well, I'm really looking forward because this is, you know, the first Saturday that I haven't had to work in 6 months.
Yeah.
That tells me a lot about both of those students. And for both of those students, I can greet them Monday morning. I literally would take notes on Post-its while the kids were talking. So I kind of looked like I wasn't paying attention, but I was writing down like little notes to myself so that when I greeted them at the door Monday morning, I could just say, how did you enjoy your first day off? Like, what did you spend the day doing on your first day off? How was your visit with your dad? I know you haven't seen him in several months. Hey, any success on the hunt? Of just these simple things. And it's amazing the difference in a connection with a student when you just show that personal interest in them.
I think that's an important lesson for mm-hmm. teachers to realize how well that is received, that if a student believes you're actually interested.
That you care.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so let's talk about collaborative learning, because I suspect the Ignite Learning Summit deals a bit with this.
Oh, there are several topics that dive into more of that collaborative learning. There's a great session planned on something called Breakout EDU. And you and your listeners might be familiar with those escape rooms.
Yes.
You know, you get locked in and you have to figure out the puzzles to get out.
You got to work together.
They're very popular.
They're very popular. And one of the most something I think is the best about education is that we can take all of these different ideas as teachers and we figure out a way to make them work in the classroom. And there's this movement called Breakout EDU, and teachers all over the country are creating lockboxes and these different puzzle-based games using their content. So an English teacher would have different puzzles with the questions all being about grammar or whatever you needed to be studying at the moment. And the students have to work together to figure out the puzzles and break out of the classroom at the end of the day. So there are some that are virtual and are all done online using, you know, Google Forms and some quizzes. And others involve actual lock boxes where students have to unlock things to get to the next clue. It kind of depends on how much time and how many resources you have to do that. There are some great teachers here right in West Fargo and Fargo who have done GoFundMe projects in order to buy Breakout EDU kits for their classroom. But it's a great way to immerse your classroom, to do something different and really shift where it's all about the kids solving hands-on problems and you as the teacher just sit back with the codes.
Yes, but it is a creative process we're talking about.
Very creative.
Teaching needs to be creative.
Teaching is such a creative process. And it's great that we can be inspired by what's happening in the quote-unquote real world and then bring in these pieces that really engage students and make it into a fully educational, immersive experience.
Right. And this kind of critical thinking, this kind of creativity, this kind of desire to learn, not very easy to assess in that sort of standardized test format. There's no simple grading
here. Right. It's much harder because now you're looking at things that could be a little bit more subjective. But this is one of the reasons why a lot of school districts are shifting to things like standards-based grades that are more about have you mastered this skill. So you're seeing schools go away from A's, B's, and C's, the things that are very comfortable and familiar mm-hmm. to people like me.
I worked so much for those
A's. I know. I strove for those things. But I will also tell you, for me personally, because I was sometimes so focused on getting that letter grade, I certainly was not always able to apply the things that I was learning in a deeper way. I could memorize those facts and I could get the good grade. And so as a teacher, I always think about that. I think about all that I knew about calculus and physics in high school and how I don't know any of it and would not be able to repair a wire in a car to save my life. I want kids to be able to apply those things. And so that's exactly what you're saying. It's harder to grade, harder to assess, but so much more meaningful in terms of real life application.
And you are learning something besides just those, reading, writing, and arithmetic. You're learning how
right.
to work with other people.
You're learning all those soft skills that really transition to any career and make you successful in any area of your life.
So once again, it's the Ignite Learning Summit. It's coming up August 13th and 14th in Fergus Falls.
Yes.
And again, how do people get involved?
Go to ignitelearningsummit.com and you can learn all about the schedule and all the registration information is there.
And Darcy, you also do some web chats, right?
I have all kinds of web chats. We have a web chat channel on YouTube. I'm happy to share that out. Anyone can message me. It's dbakigard@prairiepublic.org. And I'm happy to share out that information. I have a web chat series of YouTube videos, conversations with North Dakota educators about some of these innovations in education.
Bakigard is spelled B-A-K-K-E-G-A-R-D. Darcy Bakigard, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Dakota Datebook is next.
A box jellyfish is an ocean swimmer's worst nightmare.
Most swimmers who have ever been touched by them and lived to tell the tale have said, never, ever am I going back in those waters.
Diana Nyad tells us about her remarkable swim from Cuba to Florida. And we visit important women's history sites around America.
And Harriet Tubman now has achieved new fame and notoriety.
On the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Tomorrow at 8 Central, here on Prairie Public. This is Dakota Datebook for July 2nd. On this date, in 1909, North Dakota faced a major change as a new law had just gone into effect that meant 40-rod whiskey and other adulterated consumables were now a thing of the past. Professor E.F. Ladd of the North Dakota Agricultural College had helped write the Pure Food and Drug Law. It called for the elimination of dangerous additives. There were now penalties for anyone making or selling food that didn't meet legal standards, and that included liquor. As early as 1820, a chemist wrote a book called A Treatise on Adulterations of Food and Culinary Poisons. 82 years later, in 1902, Professor Ladd began his crusade against adulterated food. At the time, there were no regulations about additives. Manufacturers used a wide variety of substances to increase profits. Milk often contained chalk or plaster, which were also used to bulk up flour. Dirt and sand were added to coffee, tea, and spices. Common additives also included copper sulfate, borax, sulfuric acid, and formaldehyde. Medicines known as snake oil contained cocaine, opium, and heroin. These were widely available and came with no warning labels. And then there was liquor. The list of ingredients added to liquor was legendary. Recipes included grain alcohol, tobacco, red chilies, strychnine, lead, and rattlesnake heads. It's no wonder that liquor bore names like White Lightning, Taos Lightning, Red Eye, and Rotgut. 40-rod whiskey got its name because it was said the whiskey could kill at that distance. The Ward County Independent newspaper reported with pleasure that the day of adulterated squirrel juice seasoned with strychnine and given that beautiful color with chocolate is nearly over in North Dakota. No longer would anyone be able to acquire orange cider that never even saw an orange peeling, and someone looking for a beer could find one that was pure and simple. All of this is particularly interesting since North Dakota at the time was a dry state, with the sale of alcohol banned. The newspaper seemed to assume that bootleggers who felt inclined to break the law by selling liquor would somehow feel compelled to obey the purity law, producing a product without the dangerous additives. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
It's hurricane season in Puerto Rico. Rebuilding has been slow almost 2 years after Hurricane Maria devastated the island, but some people don't want to leave.
People say, aquí no me saca nadie. Nobody get me out from here.
Is Puerto Rico ready for another disaster? Plus, the latest on conditions at the border. On the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Wednesday on Main Street, I was recently in Medora, North Dakota, the state's number one summer tourist attraction, where I talked with a number of people, including Randy Hatzenbuehler, the executive director of the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation. Also on our show on Wednesday, Matt Olien will review the new movie Yesterday. Sue Balcom will join us for another episode of Main Street Eats. And Ashley and I will have our weekly What's Happening calendar of events as we head into a big holiday weekend. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Wednesday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.